640 Toronto presents Think Tank. The breaking stories you care about. Facts and opinions that get you through the day. Now, let's meet the guests.
I think it's all that. I think those are reasonably fair statements. I'm not going to quibble with either of them. Maybe we'll quibble with the guests this morning. Maybe it's that kind of Friday scenario. Lindsay Maskell is on the show. Maskell is on the show, a strategist and former political advisor. Let's just do it over again. Lindsay, what a terrible introduction for your debut on Think Tank. I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's lovely to have you. Now, I'm told, again, birdies are circling on my head clearly, and I'm told you're a big Taylor Swift fan, so this is a big morning for you. You're taking time away from her new 31 tracks to talk issues with us for 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I set an alarm for this. It was a thing. I was so happy to see all these new bonus tracks, and I think the only one happier than me is Jake Gyllenhaal for moving on from being the biggest victim.
Oh my God. Well, there's numerous. Yes, it's like a serial killer, all this songwriting. Roy Green is the host of The Roy Green Show on the Chorus Radio Network. You'll hear him tomorrow and Sunday between 2 and 5 o'clock. And Roy, listen, Taylor Swift's great, but nothing matches the excitement of Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA tour when he took all those big songs on the road with the E Street Band. Am I right? We're in lockstep on this.
I love you, my brother Greg. I love you, my brother Greg. My God, I have tickets for Springsteen.
I bet you. Oh, you're coming to Toronto to see him? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Amazing. I'm going to try and be there.
Cost me $1,800 per.
Yeah, I know. A Bruce Springsteen fan and a Taylor Swift fan, if they're married in the same relationship, guys, they've sent in. That's why inflation's still sitting there around 3%, to be honest. They've got to get that live concert spending under control. All right,
let me say this. Yeah. Let me just say this. I have to agree that Taylor Swift is an incredible phenomenon, that she has been able to reach the top and stay there and continue to grow and massively grow her audience and her legions of fans. That's so impressive to me. Look, when I was a kid, the Beatles arrived. And they'd been together for quite a few years, but they didn't last at the top for terribly long. The pressure, I think, took them apart 3 years after their career, their international career started. So Taylor Swift is an incredible phenomenon.
It's a dreadful, Roy, it's a dreadful thought to think the Beatles would be playing like Casino Rammer or something on August 3rd. I don't think so. I'd like to believe not. Yeah, that is that's got its accuracy to it. All right, let's start with this, and Lindsay, let's start with you. Yesterday, some caucus dissent. We haven't seen much of it with the Ford government. They're coming around on 6 years of being elected. I would make the case that and put an asterisk next to the pandemic because they booted some members out who decided not to get vaccinated. That was a moment in time, that's for sure. But for the most part, the Ford caucus kind of chugs along and they all agree on everything. But a member of his own party shot down an effort to reverse a ban on keffiyehs at Queen's Park. So I think there's two issues there. One is somebody going against Doug Ford from the caucus, Lindsay, but I guess the other issue is clearly the legitimacy of the ban itself at Queen's Park. It's a lot to unpack. Give me some of your thoughts on what you've seen this week.
Well, the speaker made this ruling independently, right? So the speaker had said, this is, I'm going to make this ban and hadn't talked to anybody about it. And you're allowed to have religious symbols that people wear in the legislature. So this would be the same as if you said you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to wear a cross, or you're not allowed to cover your head if you're a woman who is Muslim. So it was a wrong, like, he should not have made this ruling. And I think the thing is that it fueled this problem that we're having with obviously such a divisive issue. And the dissenting member, MPP Martin, does reside in Eglinton Lawrence, which has one of the largest Jewish community populations in Ontario. So that also put her in a very difficult position politically when there's been this, when there's been such a divide. So, I think the better thing would have been to have unanimous consent and, just not be in the legislature, right? So that would have been the better route. But, at the same time, the members should be allowed to vote with their conscience on things, but it It was not a good day, and yeah. the big fall does happen with the speaker. He shouldn't have made this ruling.
Roy, it's a tricky one. I don't like the idea of bans. You've talked about Bill 21 in Quebec on your show mm-hmm. countless times, and I like the idea, not to steal Pierre Poilievre's line. I like the idea of common sense. I'd like to think that a leader could control the caucus and say, all right, we're getting a little out of control. You can show support. We can't have a costume party here. But I make the point that, to Lindsay's point, Roy, this is just what it is. It is a boiling kettle the last 7 months. And when you open your mouth, whether it's you, me, Lindsay, any politician, you're going to tick 40% at least of the people off what you say or what you do.
Yeah. Greg, first of all, what's the speaker's job description? What does the speaker have the right to decide? And then from there, it can move forward. The political parties get involved when they have internal struggles, and I'm sure that's going on within the PC party, not only in this case. But what I find interesting, particularly interesting, is that this issue, at least relatedly, has come up in Europe twice. In just last November, the European Court of Justice, which is their highest court, ruled that government offices across the EU, so here's government involved, can ban employees from wearing religious symbols, including hijabs, in the interest of neutrality. I'd stress, though, that such restrictions must be applied, I'm reading from a news report here, equally to all employees and fit within the legal context of each member state. And let me just give you a little more from the story. The court said that bans on clothing or symbols linked to philosophical or religious beliefs had to be applied evenly. Such a rule is not discriminatory if it applies in general and indiscriminate manner to all of that administration staff and is limited to what is strictly necessary. What I'm getting at is these kinds of situations that are starting to appear in this country could wind up before the courts. Let's not discount that. And in 2017, the same European Court of Justice, highest court in the European Union, ruled similarly that hijabs are not, it's not a right to wear them. It all depends on whether or not the employer is presenting a neutral stance to the public. So could this situation with the speaker wind up in court? And now there's the precedent in Europe.
Right. I want to circle back to Lindsay on just the Ford caucus issue, too. Like I said, they've been very strong. They've been very united on an awful lot of issues. And sometimes I know on this show we kind of approach things because it's Toronto. But you get outside the city and you realize people talk about the Ford government like they just can't miss. And they've had their share of misses, but it's the reversal of these policies. This is a very popular government outside of the 416, I think, Roy. So people wonder what's happening when there's a little bit of dissent.
Well, but I think that dissent on, you know, these aren't, you know, I wouldn't say these are they're fundamental policy issues to the brand of the party. This is, you know, very heated. This is, you know, this is religion. This is global, like a huge global issue. And, you know, sometimes I also think that we've all a little bit overstepped that everybody has to have an opinion when they haven't been fully educated on, you know, I said the number of people I hear talking that have not been fully educated on this issue that are kind of out of their realm and are going to make a mistake. And I think that this falls into that, particularly on a provincial government, that, you know, they're not the Minister of Foreign Affairs. If I was Premier Ford, I would not feel like this was, you know, an earth-shattering, divisive issue for caucus. I think it's personally divisive, but it's not a big divide on, as for example, as it was on vaccination or masks, for example, that they needed to be united on, especially during a pandemic.
Fair comment, Roy. We're asking municipal politicians questions. And by the way, now that everybody's got a camera on their phone, you see it in the States, too. We're chasing people around and asking them their opinion. Why don't you think there should be a ceasefire? What do you think about this? And they're municipal councillors or they're local MPPs with 40,000 people in their riding. It's they're not going to move the needle on what Israel decides to do or not to do.
No. And what are we talking about now, Greg?
Well, just the idea of you know, we're pushing the idea that every single MPP has to have an opinion on what's happening all the time internationally.
I agree with Lindsay that too often people are asked for views on issues they're not really conversant with. And so because you're right, just because there's a camera in their face, they feel like, well, I better say something. And what can I possibly recall about this? And what would get me in the least amount of trouble? So I'll try to go with that and hope for the best. And you get what you get in circumstances like this. And we've all seen politicians, we've all seen people elected to office embarrass themselves, embarrass their councils, embarrass their parties because they're not up to speed on an issue they really don't have a need to be totally conversant with. The camera, you're right, cameras follow you everywhere, and you better have an opinion.
Lindsay Maskell joining us, Roy Green joining us. It's Think Tank. We'll run it up till the top of the hour at 8 o'clock. Lindsay, I'm going to come to a Toronto-centric issue, and it's got to do with the vacant home tax rollout. The city council decided to vote to keep this process going, but to tweak it a lot. But there's a lot of finger-pointing about a process that looked really, really flawed. It's almost like that negative billing that we get sometimes with cable companies and phone companies. And Brad Bradford, the city councilor, I think put it the right way. You're starting with the premise of guilt. You're asking people to prove they live in a home. And we get that sometimes with the CRA. They're going to say, hey, validate this. Send me your receipts for that. You can't claim it unless we know what happened. But it looks like Toronto really messed this up here.
Well, it's his approach, first of all, said, I have not loved his approach on a lot since he ran for mayor. Mm-hmm. The vacant home tax is actually a really great, it's important. It also would really help basically put the pressure on people who are sitting on multiple homes, really helping with some potential housing supply. This really was a major administrative issue. The previous year, there were only 11,000 vacant homes. So how would we go to over 160,000? So this is where common sense should have been applied. So, you know, to me, this would be very much a department flaw. And I don't know at what level that would have been brought up for political oversight of this is how many we have this year, that somebody couldn't have done that simple math and said, maybe there's a problem there. I think a lot of people thought they actually only had to do it one time, right? Of people I know that I was talking to. But look, I also heard for weeks and weeks and weeks on the news that you have to do this. So, I don't think, I think that the invoices that went out with the already late penalty on them shouldn't have happened. There should have been some common sense there. But at the same time, I actually think the Mayor Chow actually handled it pretty well of, you know, this program started before her. This would have been a lot of this process would have happened in that interim time. And this might have not been something that got brought to the desk, but she wears it anyway and said, we'll fix it. And and if there's still a problem next year, it's full ownership.
Yeah, so, I think that's an interesting conversation. I mean, she got elected in June. They roll this out in March. There's enough time if there were struggles with the process. But to Lindsay's point, Roy, this is we know this, right? Municipalities are looking for revenue under every couch cushion imaginable. So it isn't so much the process of saying, we can't allow speculators to sit there with a vacant home and not try and, you know, get more money from them. But Vancouver, I'd make the point, Roy, you know, it's such a different demographic. There are a lot more vacant homes. There are a lot more properties just sitting there bought with foreign money that sit there. I don't know that Toronto's quite the same because of demographic and geographical issues.
No, I hear it a lot from Vancouver. I heard a lot, Greg. And thank you, by the way, for letting me know that municipal councillors reach under couch cushions. Now I know where my loose change has gone. but look, for some reason, and it's just the sort of disconnected synapses first thing in the morning for me, is like, let's connect them so I can talk to you, Greg. I moved over to ArriveCan. And it was the same sort of thing. I thought, wait a minute, why didn't somebody along the way say, hold on, this was budgeted at 80 grand.
Yeah.
It's been going on for months. Millions of people are involved. It can't be $80,000 anymore. Let's check it out. So there should have been alarm bells when the numbers just so dramatically increased. And someone should have said, hey, time out. Let's check it out. And now you have what you have. The situation is a mess. And it has to be brought under control. People are upset, and quite rightly so. And sometimes we just get a look at what happens when government at any level completely misfires and nobody takes responsibility for saying, hold on a minute. And there wasn't a hold on a minute moment. So clearly.
Roy, let me stay with you here and then I'll get to Lindsay. But I know we've seen the coverage of it in the States a fair bit. And we saw university deans and presidents from, it was three of the Ivy League schools, and they had to testify in front of Congress a few weeks ago. And it ended up costing a couple of them their job because they couldn't.
Harvard president.
Exactly. They couldn't properly define anti-Semitism when they saw it on campuses. And just like we were saying earlier, everything feels like a powder keg, but university campuses especially feel that way. I remember feeling activated when I was on one as a student, that's for sure. This story from the National Post deals with York University, and they've got a faculty group that recommends defining support of Israel as racism. Now, that's something to me, if a faculty wants to step off the campus and have that conversation with a neighbor at the mailbox or in their own household or at a restaurant that night with a friend. But it shouldn't be on the campus. It shouldn't be in the classroom. And right now, Roy, I think we're wondering with our schools whether there's any oversight on these particular things. It's got a ripple effect. So I'm asking you, do you think we need more oversight from governments at universities like we were seeing in the States, given that governments fund universities to a great extent? What do you think?
Yeah, I do. But we also need more involvement and engagement from university administrations that is fair, that is just. This York University faculty group, now this to me is anti-Semitism on clear display. I just had on the air with me 2 weeks ago a great guest of yours and mine, Professor Eric Kam, who's Jewish, at Toronto Metropolitan University, with one of his students who's Jewish, who was feeling really harassed and intimidated in the school environment, and that's totally unacceptable. And Professor Kam encouraged his student to not feel that way, to be proud of who she is. And she has, with his guidance, accepted that this is the way she's going to be. She's proud of who she is. Such a decision by this faculty group would only serve to intimidate the Jewish students, and the administration had better take action. And if they do not, then, government has to step in. But we have to. Now, we're now at the point, I know it's provincial jurisdiction, but we're now at the point we ask ourselves, where's our federal government stand? What are they up to? I spoke with a representative of the Israeli Foreign Ministry on the program last Sunday, and she said, when I asked her about Canada, she said, well, clearly your federal government, Mr. Trudeau, has chosen the wrong path. So it is such a huge issue, but my advice on this situation is ignore them, and if government has to get involved, then so be it. But the university administrations, they're the ones who are responsible for managing their environments. And as you said, we saw what happened in the United States.
Lindsay, it's tricky, isn't it? A university campus should be where we learn to think, but not get told what to think. And I really hesitate. I hear the word. I still do. When I hear the word indoctrination, whether you're 5 or whether you're 20, I think, come on, that's a right wing talking point. I don't like it. But it defines itself in Webster's as the process of teaching a person or group to accept a set of beliefs uncritically. And I worry that that's some of what we've got with this. I'm fine with knowing what a professor thinks, but he needs to also let me as a student think what I think and not be judged harshly if I don't agree with him or her. And I worry we've got that problem right now.
Well, the number of cases on university campuses of just, you cannot, just the lack of freedom of speech, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, they're supposed to be a place of learning. And there's just such a closed off, there's such a closed off place now of, well, but only this, right? You can never hear a dissenting voice or a counter argument, which as we're proving right here today, does not work in the real life, where in real life, where you need to hear different viewpoints, garner that through education. But so it's just getting worse and worse. And even to the point, I have to say, like, I was a political staffer for a liberal premier, and I don't go into universities anymore because the fear of that kind of, cancel culture of if you say something that they do not like, because a few classes that I had gone into definitely did not agree with a viewpoint.
When did you notice that? What were those years that you noticed that, Lindsay?
I would say, mostly it's been post-pandemic. that it has been that it has been even felt even stronger. And, you know, I think that's difficult, especially in a class of like, you know, look, if you're interested in politics and you're in university and you're not hearing from people because you're, you know, canceling out people, you may not like their opinion of like, that's what politics is going to be. You're going to be working with people who have different opinions from you and need to find solutions for the public. So it's not a really, to me, it's really limiting their learning environment and getting far too heated. And I definitely agree there needs to be some oversight.
It's a macro thing to finish on, Roy, but I don't know where we got to the point, and it isn't just isolated to university campuses, although I think it's pretty bad, to Lindsay's point. I don't know where we got from, you know, you feel that way, you're into that. I'm not really. We went from, hey, I'm not with your idea, to I hate you or you're a hateful person. We jumped over that hurdle somewhere, and it's bad news that we did.
Yeah, it is. And it didn't happen overnight. It's just that we've become so aware of it in the last number of months because of, well, since October the 7th of last year and the Hamas terrorist attack on Israel, we've become aware of the depth and level of feeling and emotion and anger and intimidation that exists. And it's a very unfortunate, distasteful, and ultimately dangerous situation. Lynch is absolutely 100% correct. The debate has to take place. You cover issues with each other. You may come at an issue from a completely different compass point, but if you're talking to people and you're expressing your points of view and they're being heard and responded to, it's a heck of a lot better than what we're running into now. Can I just say this?
Yeah, feel free.
I want to get the Taylor Swift.
we're out of time. I'm not joking. I felt like we covered it off at the beginning.
I want it, Greg.
But this is freedom for you guys to start tracks 1 through 31 or even do it alphabetically on both your Spotify accounts. You're free.
I'm at 19.
Oh, my goodness. We're deep into the double digits. Yeah, this isn't Purple Rain with just 9 songs, Roy. I mean, I was able to get through, even though my parents fast-forwarded through a couple of the songs because of the lyric content.
I never liked Prince.
They were censors. Oh, I didn't like my parents because they didn't like Prince. So Roy, I don't like you any less. This shows you we're getting to a better place. You are not canceled because you don't like Prince and I do.
Okay, thank you.
We'll leave it there.
That so much.
I'll be listening tomorrow. And Lindsay, great pleasure having you on. We'll certainly do it again.
Thanks for having me.
Lindsay Maskell, Roy Green, Think Tank.